This morning, our speaker is Karen Johnson. Karen is currently the chair of UUFM. She has a degree in psychology from Davidson College, but she prefers teaching math. Karen describes herself as a tree-hugging pagan. Oh, sounds good. She will speak on the topic solstice/Yule. Let's welcome Karen.
In Hogfather by Terry Pratchett, and you all knew I'd start with Sir Terry. In Hogfather, Death and his granddaughter Susan fight to save the Hogfather, who is very much like our Father Christmas. And Susan does save the wild boar, who is the first incarnation of the winter sacrifice, who becomes the foreigner or slave sacrifice, who becomes the selected by chance or lottery sacrifice, who becomes the symbolically sacrificed, who becomes the druid, who becomes the priest, who becomes the fat man in blood red and snow white furs. And Susan asks, what would have happened if I hadn't saved him? The sun would have risen just the same, yes? No, says Death. Oh, come on, you can't expect me to believe that. It's an astronomical fact. No, the sun would not have risen. A mere ball of flaming gas would have illuminated the world. Ah, said Susan dully, trickery with words. I would have thought you'd have been more literal-minded than that. I am nothing if not literal-minded. Trickery with words is where humans live. No, humans need fantasy to be human, to be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape. Tooth fairies and hogfathers as practice. You have to start out learning to believe the little lies so that you can believe the big ones like justice, mercy, duty, that sort of thing. You act as if there is some ideal order in the world, as if there is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged. Yes, but people have got to believe that, or what's the point? My point exactly. Stars explode, worlds collide, there's hardly anywhere in the universe where humans can live without being frozen or fried. And yet you believe that a bed is a normal thing. It is the most amazing talent. You make us sound mad. No, you need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become true? In the end, it's all about metaphors making meaning. And so solstice, the midwinter. Astronomically speaking, winter solstice is the time when the sun reaches its southernmost, or northernmost, but right now I'm talking about northern hemispherical winter, point in the sky as seen from the equator. This is the point over the Tropic of Capricorn, some 47 degrees lower than 6 months ago. This year, it's December 22nd, 4:48 Greenwich time. For us, that's December 21st, 10:48 p.m. We will have 9 hours, 43 minutes, and 35 seconds of daylight. After this point, the Earth wobbles a bit on its axis, and the Sun, or Sol, appears to stop, sestere, and then eventually heads back toward the equator. What we experience from our perspective on Earth is that the days have been growing shorter and the nights longer up to this point. At solstice, we get our shortest and earliest day, and therefore the longest and latest night. Well, not really, since if you look at the almanac, and because the Earth does kind of wobble a bit, our latest sunrise is December 31st through January 13th, and our earliest sunset is November 28th through December 13th. But astronomically, what's going to happen as the sun climbs back up the latitudinal ladder is that days will get progressively longer and the nights marginally shorter. Technically, and this is according to the stardate.org, the solstice time is not easy to determine. The changes in solar declination become smaller as the sun gets closer to its maximum or minimum declination. The days before and after the solstice, the declination speed is less than 30 arc seconds per day, which is less than 1/60th of the angular size of the sun, or the equivalent to just 2 seconds of right ascension. This difference is hardly detectable with indirect viewing-based devices like sextants, and impossible with more traditional tools like gnomons or an astrolabe. It is also hard to detect the changes on sunrise-sunset azimuth due to the atmospheric refraction changes. Those accuracy issues render it impossible to determine the solstice day based on observations made within the 3 or even 5 days surrounding the solstice without the use of more complex tools. Wow, what wonders we've realized with modern technology, timekeeping, and so on. But not really. All this was known thousands and thousands of years ago, and it was recognized. Although for a while there, folks thought the sun was what was wobbling, not us. And it was celebrated. Of course it was celebrated, especially by Northern Caucasian historians with rocks to write on and or dry places to store the papers, and those with strong oral historians, because those are the ones that we know about. Solstice is probably the first holy day of amazement that mankind celebrated. Imagine, the end of the harvest was a few months ago. You bunged up enough food, you hoped, to get you through the winter, the dark, the cold, not enough sunlight hours or warmth to grow anything much. It gets darker and colder and more depressing, and thoughts of starvation and hypothermia set in. And then, oh yeah, it's solstice. The sun stops trying to move south permanently and shows signs of coming back. Hope, yes. And man, do we need an excuse to celebrate. And so we do. As humans got more sophisticated and decided to develop philosophy, theology, and religion, we went from just recording notches or placing rocks to mark the thank goodness it's coming back, and graduated to thank gods it's coming back. Humans have to make it mean something more than a plain old miracle. As though this overlaid meaning, this metaphor, is more important and impressive, more wondrous than the awesome miracle that it is. The earth wobbles and tilts and our weather changes. Why do we have to make such an astonishing event seem like mere trickery unless it is overlaid with human finger mind prints? Religion gets pulled into it, of course. Priests start feeling powerful and demanding sacrifices to make sure it really happens. Without the sacrifice to the gods, of course, not the priests, wink, wink, the sun may not return. Bards and priests start calling it God's work, and stories spring up around it. Then it becomes God's stories. The newborn god, the newly arisen god, the return of the god strikes back. Sorry, that was my Star Wars. From Mithra and Osiris to Alcyon and Amaterasu, from Baldur to Spider-Woman, solstice becomes the tale of these pagan gods bringing the warmth and sun back to the earth. These stories are so ingrained, so important to people, and the celebrations so fixed in traditions, in hope, in the stars, in the stones, that even Jesus couldn't budge them. No one thought December 25th was the birth of Christ until the church realized it couldn't fight such a powerful metaphor, and so they co-opted it. Hell, even the Puritans outlawed Christmas celebrations, as the pagan revelry it certainly was and is. But the traditions got deeper and stronger. And so, Yule. Yule is what pagans celebrate on the solstice. Because pagan is such a hugely huge umbrella term for a hugely diverse bunch of beliefs, well, I'll describe just a few of them just to be as brief as possible. Many pagans worship gods and goddesses much older than Jesus and the Jews. All of these stories tell us about a god, gods, or goddess being born or returning from the dead of winter, to bring back life, warmth, the sun, hope, spring, to his, her, or its followers. And I'll make just a brief note about pagans. When I talk about Celtic pagans, for example, I don't mean just those heathens living in the British Isles. Each pagan, wherever he or she lives, picks his or her own path, embracing whichever pantheon of gods and goddesses speaks to him or her. Some pagans are mono or duotheists, choosing one god or goddess or a pair. Some pagans are pantheists. Some are atheists, but see in their chosen pantheons archetypes which resonate with them. And some are just gardener hedge witches, simply embracing the natural world as a whole thing. So don't feel bound by your ancestry or where you're planted now. If it means something to you, that is what matters. Some pagans practice sympathetic magic with the bonfires and the greenery, kind of a note to the universe to come on and get on with it already. For Wiccans, Yule is also known as Alban Arthan and is one of the lesser Sabbats of the Wiccan year, from a time when ancient believers celebrated the rebirth of the sun god and days with more light. Celtic pagans celebrate the story of the Holly King and the Oak King. At the winter solstice, the Holly King battles the Oak King for supremacy and is defeated. The Oak King is actually the Holly King's younger self, and the goddess is going to mourn the death of the Holly King and then later marry him again in the guise of the Oak King, and then she's going to give birth to him. And it keeps going around. The feast of Jewel was a pre-Christian festival observed in Scandinavia at the winter solstice. Even now, Scandinavian pagans light fires to symbolize the heat, light, and life-giving properties of the returning sun. A Yule, or Jule, I'm not saying that right, log is brought in and burned on the hearth in honor of the Scandinavian god Thor. A little bit further north, Norse pagans may celebrate Frau Holly shaking out her feather mattress, or the goddess Frigga, who is the mother of Baldur, who is killed by a mistletoe spear thrown by his blind twin brother Hodor and restored to life on solstice, or the all-father Odin, who rides a magical flying horse across the sky, bestowing gifts upon his people at Yule. The Romans celebrated De Natalis Invicti Solis, which is the birthday of the unconquered sun. This unconquered sun may have been the god Sol, or it may have been the god Mithra or Mithras, depending on the area. In ancient Rome, the winter solstice festival was Saturnalia, which began on December the 17th and lasted for 7 days. This festival was held to honor Saturn, the father of the gods. Modern Roman pagans offer traditional gifts of imitation fruit, which is a symbol of fertility, dolls, which are symbolic of this custom of human sacrifice, and candles, which are reminiscent of the bonfires traditionally associated with pagan solstice celebrations. In ancient Rome, a mock king was chosen, usually from a group of slaves or criminals, and although he was permitted to behave in an unrestrained manner for the 7 days of the festival, he was usually killed at the end. Modern pagans don't do that. In Poland, the ancient winter solstice observance prior to Christianity involved people showing forgiveness and sharing food, and this is a tradition that is still seen in what is known as Gerdy. Karachin, or Krachin, was and is a Slavic pagan holiday. December 21st, the longest night of the year and the night of the winter solstice, is the day when the black god and other spirits associated with decay and darkness are most potent. Hors, who symbolizes the old sun, has become smaller as the days become shorter, and he dies on December the 22nd, the winter solstice, defeated by the dark and evil powers of the black god. On December the 23rd, he is resurrected and becomes the new sun, Kolida. This holiday is usually celebrated with ancestor worship, and they light fires at cemeteries to keep their loved ones warm and organize feasts to honor the dead and keep them fed. They also light wooden logs at local crossroads. In the northwestern corner of Pakistan, a festival called Kaomas takes place among the Kalash Kafir people. It lasts for at least 7 days, including the day of the winter solstice. It involves ritual baths as part of a purification process, as well as singing and chanting, a torch-like procession, dancing, bonfires, and festive eating. Egyptian pagans celebrate the birth of the powerful solar god Horus, who was the child of the great god Osiris, who rose from the dead, and the mother goddess Isis. And Horus may or may not have gone on to become Ra, who is the sun god. In Guatemala, on St. Thomas's Day, which just happens to fall on the winter solstice, Mayan Indians honor the sun god they worship long before they became Christians. They honor this with a dangerous ritual known as the Polo Volador, or the flying pole dance. Three men climb on top of a 50-foot pole. As one of them beats a drum and plays a flute, the other two men wind a rope attached to the pole around 1 foot and jump. If they land on their feet, it is believed that the sun god will be pleased and that the days will start getting longer. The ancient Incas celebrated a special festival to honor the sun god at the time of the winter solstice. In the 1950s, a local group of Quechua Indians in Cusco, Peru, revived this festival, which has now become a major party. Native American pagans may celebrate Spider Woman, once more calling the warmth to the world, spinning her web around the sun and drawing it back to warm this land. The Hopi celebrate with a soil ceremony, which begins on the shortest day of the year and symbolizes the second phase of creation at the dawn of life. And Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus, the life-giving sun, spelled S-O-N in this case. All of these are strong, powerful metaphors. Every culture has one from time immemorial. But really, even an atheist, even a humanist, can celebrate this solstice. Hallelujah, we're halfway through the winter. More sunlight. God's promise, or astrophysics, telling us that spring is on its way, then summer, with warmth and daylight returning. Damn good reason to party, in my opinion, even without gods, rebirths, births, or sacrifice. So celebrate. My advice to you is simple. Celebrate whatever you call it. Have a good time and make it meaningful to you. Celebrate and welcome back the warmth, the light, and hope. It's cold, so have some glog, or call it wassail. Have a buttered rum, or have some hot chocolate with snowy marshmallows, or have some life-giving coffee, which comes from warm lands and holds that bright sunshine within each bean. But drink something warm. Remember, you are calling back the warmth. Have a winter feast or just a special meal with good friends and or family, and serve Yule puddings and porridge with a bean in it so you can choose a Christmas king, but no killing, please. Or serve something traditional to your heritage to remind you of your ancestors, like Swedish braid or grits casserole, or old favorites to remember the loved ones you lost this year. Or serve foods that remind you of the sunshine, fruits like oranges or non-root veggies like squash, because now we can get them even though they're out of season, or even root veggies because now is their season, or just comfort foods because it's dark and cold outside. But eat something warm. Remember, you are welcoming back the warmth. It's dark and cold, so have a Yule fire, or call it a bonfire, or call it a fire. Make flame to encourage the sun to return, or to light the way for Persephone to come back from the halls of Hades, or to burn your bridges and old habits you want to discard, or to light your inner fire to keep those New Year's resolutions, or even just light a smaller flame, a candle. If you want to brighten things up, light frankincense-scented Christmas candles, or a menorah, or a chalice. Huddle around for warmth, for community, for family, or to guide Santa to your house, or to keep Krampus away from your house. Or just to make sure you have candles if and when the winter storms knock out the power. But light a flame. Remember, you are calling back the light. Dress up your house or apartment or room or car. Make a concentrated effort to manifest some outward declaration that this is a special time of year. Pine cones and branches, holly or mistletoe, because they're evergreen and symbolize the whatever. The druids' holy woods, the modern Christmas stories, the everlasting life of Gaia. And hey, you can find these growing outside all the time around in winter. Or make everything white, whether or not there's snow on the ground. They do this in San Diego where it never snows, and half of those kids have never even seen real snow. And of course, bringing in some sign of life from nature has a scientifically proven positive effect on your mood, especially at this time of year. Or maybe just show off all the holiday cards that you've received from loved ones and the newspaper carrier. But decorate at least a little. Remember, you are welcoming back the light. If you want to feel good inside and generous, give gifts to celebrate and remember. The gifts of the Magi, or the gifts of Sinterklaas, or the Hulopuki, who is the Finnish Yule goat. Or give a gift for the coming New Year, for the fact that it's cold and dark outside and people may be needing more warm socks and ugly sweaters. Or just because everyone else is doing it and you get caught up in the seasonal sales frenzies. Or because giving a gift makes you feel warm and happy inside at this cold, dark time of year. Or call someone up because it's cold and dark and depressing outside and they or you may need a lift. Time is a gift. But give a gift. Remember, you are calling back hope. Making it meaningful makes it powerful and makes you feel good inside. All these metaphors have been around for a long, long time, so there must be something to it. You could even start your own traditions and give those your own powerful meanings. And you can tell the world, or not. But make it meaningful. Make it religiously meaningful, or make it spiritually meaningful, or make it magically meaningful. Look at the stars at night. Look at the sunrise and the sunset and know that they're changing. At this time of solstice, but really at all times of year, life is and should be made up of moments of awe. Find what awes you. Remember, you are welcoming back hope. So in the end, make space in your life for meaningful metaphors for life. Eat, drink, and be merry and bright, meaningfully. So have yourself a merry little Christmas, a happy Hanukkah, blessed Kwanzaa, old-time Yalda, jolly Saturnalia, safe Karachun, a tremendous axial tilt, a brilliant human light, a federally granted vacation day, a merry whatever floats your boat at this time of year, blessed Yule, super solstice, but above all else, blessed be. Thank you.